Now it is the time to respect each other and to respect the reality and to respect the right of each other.
The Taliban talk with the Afghans, at least some of them. This is Tuesday, the 9th of July, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, a top UN official has some harsh words for U.S. policy along its southern border. We have the latest for you in the continuation of Hong Kong protests over the weekend. Australia is keeping a Chinese spy ship in its sights. It's all coming your way on today's VOA Asia. Dozens of prominent Afghan citizens met with Taliban representatives in Qatar's capital Doha Monday for a second day of a conference seeking to end the 18-year war in Afghanistan. Meanwhile, also in Doha, U.S. and Taliban negotiators are conducting a seventh round of talks with the U.S. looking to conclude its involvement in Afghanistan's civil war. VOA's Lada Tahok has more.
A delegation of more than 50 Afghan politicians and civil society activists opened a two-day meeting with the Taliban on Sunday. One participant told VOA there are signs that some of the Taliban attitudes have changed.
I feel their attitude has changed and they are ready to talk to women. Last night at dinner was the first time I met with Taliban representatives and some of the envoys came to talk to us.
Senior Taliban representative Mullah Abdul Salam Zaif told VOA that the group will not accept any decisions imposed on them despite political and military pressure.
The war community, including the government, including their alliance, they used all their best in the pressure in Afghanistan, but they are defeated. Now it is the time to respect each other and to respect the reality and to respect the right of each other. And then they will. We are sure we should find a way.
The Taliban has so far refused any talks with the Afghan government, calling it a U.S. puppet. The group said any government delegates in the current intra-Afghan talks are there in a private capacity. U.S. and Taliban negotiators began a seventh round of direct talks in Doha on June 29. But Washington has made it clear that the Taliban must talk with the government in Kabul to seal a final peace deal.
We have made progress, but no final agreement yet.
The two sides will resume Tuesday their discussions facilitated by Qatar and Germany.
The efforts made by many over the past few years and months, especially the ongoing talks between the United States and the Taliban, have opened up a historic opportunity. But as important as those talks are, they cannot be enough. Dialogue has to turn into a meaningful negotiating process.
While the rival groups discussed ways to end the 18-year-old conflict on Sunday, a Taliban attack in Afghanistan's city of Ghazni killed at least 14 people and wounded more than 180 others, at least one-third of them children. Zlatica Hope, VOA News, Washington.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Amnesty International is calling for the United Nations to investigate possible crimes against humanity as a result of the Philippines' drug policy. Afghan authorities say they've arrested four Islamic State operatives, including a university teacher, during a counterterrorism raid in Kabul, as reports say the Middle Eastern terrorist group has grown into a major security challenge for U.S.-backed Afghan forces struggling to contain the Taliban. North Korea media report a South Korean man has defected to North Korea to permanently live there and work for its unification with the South. Jo In-guk is the son of two high-level diplomats who also defected to the North in 1984 after a political dispute with then-South Korean President Park Chung-hee. The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, has condemned the conditions of detention in which refugees and migrants are being held on the southern border of the United States. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the High Commissioner's headquarters in Geneva.
UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet calls conditions in these detention camps appalling for both adult and child refugees and migrants, but especially so for the children. Her spokeswoman, Ravina Shamdasani, tells VOA the High Commissioner, as a former pediatrician and as a mother, grandmother, and former head of state, feels personally stricken by the plight of the children.
She's deeply shocked from all these perspectives at the way that children are being forced to sleep on the floor in overcrowded facilities without access to adequate health care or food, separated from their families in many circumstances, and with very poor sanitation conditions. And these are conditions that have been documented by the Department of Homeland Security's Office of the Inspector General itself.
Shamdasani says any deprivation of liberty for child and adult migrants should be a measure of last resort. She says the UN Rights Office is concerned about the U.S. government's management policy, which seems to be based on detecting, detaining, and deporting irregular migrants.
This is particularly egregious when, in the case of children, who in many cases are being separated from their families, being held in horrid detention conditions. The many different UN human rights bodies have found that the detention of migrant children may constitute cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment, which is, of course, prohibited by international law.
Shamdasani says children should never be held in immigration detention or separated from their families. She says doing so may cause irreparable harm to the child's development and well-being. Kevin McAleenan, the acting secretary of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, maintained on Sunday that reports of unsanitary conditions and inadequate food and water are unsubstantiated. In a recent television interview, he said steps are being taken to improve the detention centers. Some members of the U.S. Congress are also calling for the improved treatment of migrants being held in U.S. custody. Migrant arrests by the U.S. Border Patrol this year have hit the highest level since 2007. In May alone, agents detained nearly 133,000 refugees and migrants, including more than 11,500 unaccompanied children. Shamdasani tells VOA migration is a very complex issue. She says the U.S., Mexico, and Central American countries have to work together to address the root causes compelling migrants to leave their homes. She adds this needs to be done in a way that puts the human rights of the migrants front and center of any policies that are adopted. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
On the topic of migrants, there are fears an Australian scheme that gives temporary visas to migrants from the South Pacific is depriving island nations of some of their most productive workers. The program began last year. It's designed to address chronic labor shortages in parts of Australia. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Pacific Labor Scheme allows migrants from 10 South Pacific countries to work in Australia in low and semi-skilled jobs for 3 years. It's hoped remittances from migrant workers will help to alleviate poverty and boost development in the South Pacific, while Australian farmers, for example, who struggle to find enough staff, can now tap into an enthusiastic pool of labour. Temporary migrants from the South Pacific earn Australian rates of pay, which are invariably much higher than wages at home. But critics say the scheme is damaging the economies of participating countries, such as Samoa, Fiji and Papua New Guinea, who are losing some of their brightest and most productive workers. Lionel Kaluat is the former head of Vanuatu's Labour Commission.
Most of the people who are going to the program now are people who are already in employment and already acquired skills. So it's a wake-up call for the Vanuatu government.
But Australia insists it is carefully monitoring the impact of the program to limit any adverse effects on South Pacific economies. Kathy Klugman is from Australia's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade.
We are dealing very closely with Pacific Island governments and the relevant agencies of government across the Pacific to maximise the benefits of the scheme and to reduce or eliminate concerns about brain drain.
Earlier this month, Canberra increased the time foreign backpackers from about 20 countries, including Britain, Canada and Japan, were able to work in Australia to 3 years if they take jobs on farms, in a further effort to address chronic labour shortages. However, there are fears that backpackers are taking jobs from those eligible for the Pacific Labour Scheme. Reports say that only 10% of visas allocated to the scheme were issued in its first year. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, caught in the crossfire of the U.S.-China trade war, the French news agency is reporting that Chinese students are looking for alternative study destinations, threatening to turn off an important source of revenue for American universities. China accounts for nearly a third of foreign students on U.S. campuses. Stay up to date with VOA. This is VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us. Tens of thousands of protesters marched on Sunday to raise awareness among mainland Chinese visitors about the political crisis that has rocked that city before a smaller group clashed with police. Hong Kong police arrested six people after the protest, which occurred in one of the city's biggest tourist areas. VOA's Steve Miller asked local journalist Shermaine Lito to describe Sunday's gathering.
They actually marched to West Kowloon Station, and the demonstrators were trying to spread the message of anti-extradition to the mainland tourists, and that's why they picked the spot. And it was quite unique because it was the biggest protest on the Kowloon side of Hong Kong. And that's why I think some of the slogans were chanted in Mandarin yesterday instead of the usual Cantonese that were seen in the previous protests.
What kind of slogans were chanted in Mandarin?
So they reiterated the five demands. So the first one is definitely the most urgent one, is a complete withdrawal of the bill. And they also want the government to recall the categorization of riots. And also they want the police to drop the charges of the protesters and investigate on police brutality. And this time they also add a new demand. So before that, they would ask Carrie Lam to step down, but they changed that now to universal suffrage.
So after the protests during the day on Sunday, there are more protesters who stayed around in the area into the evening and then clashed with police. Can you describe what took place?
I was at the protest till around 8 or 9. So I have seen a rising tension between the protesters and the police. So I've seen a lot of protesters shouting insults at the police, and the police are trying to not do anything about it. But I think at midnight, it escalated to another level. There was definitely some clashes between the two groups that resulted in the arrest of six people at the end.
Do we know more about the charges being levied against them?
Some of them are about attacking police officers, and some are failing to show their identity documents.
We've been talking about these protests in Hong Kong for over a month now. They culminated, so to speak, with the break-in at the legislative complex last week. Where do these protests seem to be headed, especially since we are now seeing police making arrests, not only with the legislative complex break-in, but also with Sunday's protests?
Well, I've seen netizens organizing more protests this month. So there are 18 districts in Hong Kong, so the netizens are trying to have a new campaign of spreading this anti-extradition law in all the 18 districts. So they're organizing two new protests in the next two Sundays.
That was Hong Kong-based journalist Shermaine Lee speaking with VOA's Steve Miller. Stay with us. Coming up, Australia is carefully watching a Chinese ship. This is VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Music. This news from VOA Asia. Tensions in disputed Kashmir after a deadly suicide bombing earlier this year are having a severe impact on human rights in the region. That from a UN report released Monday. The report by the UN Human Rights Council says that arbitrary detentions during search operations by Indian troops are leading to a range of human rights violations. You're listening to VOA Asia. Australia is closely tracking a high-tech Chinese spy ship that's believed to be on its way to monitor war games off the Queensland coast. Australian defense officials suspect the ship will try to gather information as multinational military drills begin. Phil Mercer is back with us from Sydney with the story.
The Chinese ship is fitted with advanced communication systems to eavesdrop on other forces. The AGI, or Auxiliary General Intelligence Vessel, was thought to be north of Papua New Guinea, Australia's nearest neighbour, over the weekend, on a journey that's expected to end off the coast of Queensland. It's thought the ship will closely monitor huge joint military exercises from just outside Australian territory. For the first time, Japanese forces are involved in military drills in Australian waters with the United States. Experts believe the Chinese have particular interest in the Japanese Amphibious Rapid Deployment Brigade and how it operates with its US and Australian counterparts. It was formed last year, partly in response to tensions in the East China Sea. Japan has control of the uninhabited Senkaku Islands, although Beijing also claims them under another name. Lieutenant General Greg Bilton, the Chief of Defence Joint Operations, says Australia will keep a close watch of the movement of the Chinese surveillance vessel.
In regards to the AGI, we believe there is one north of Australia at the moment. We're tracking it. We don't know yet what its destination is, but we're assuming that it will come down to the east coast of Queensland, and we'll take appropriate measures in regards to that. It is international waters. They have the right to sail there. I'm not going to go into operational details, but we'll just take appropriate actions in regards to that. It's a vessel that collects information, so it's not a great threat, but we'll take appropriate action.
Analysts believe the presence of the Chinese ship highlights a double standard from the superpower. They believe that while China will be exercising its rights under a United Nations convention to monitor the war games in international waters, it often forces foreign ships out of its self-declared military alert zones. Up to 25,000 military personnel from the United States and Australia, as well as Canada, New Zealand and Japan, are taking part in Exercise Talisman Sabre that runs until August. They're held every 2 years. In 2017, a Chinese surveillance ship was spotted off eastern Australia during the manoeuvres. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This news break from VOA Asia. IMF officials said the $6 billion loan package for Pakistan approved by the International Monetary Fund last week will require very ambitious fiscal measures and sustained commitment for the bailout to succeed. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Science and the determination of the human spirit propelled Apollo 11 to the moon 50 years ago. But it was popular culture that imagined man there long before July 16, 1969, say filmmakers and popular culture experts. VOA's Penelope Pulo revisits landmark films and TV series that allowed people to dream and help make Apollo 11 a reality, and others more recent that have paid tribute to the historic event.
Moon exploration was the theme of the 40-minute feature film, A Trip to the Moon, by Georges Méliès in 1902. The film was, among others, influenced by Jules Verne's sci-fi novels. In 1950, George Pell's sci-fi Destination Moon offered a prophetic plot where the astronauts, upon landing on the lunar surface, are running out of fuel.
Kick her up, Jim. Give her some lateral.
Too late.
Got to land her in the next few seconds of firing and won't have enough to get home.
Apollo 11's real-life close call of running out of fuel and having only one try to light the ascent engine off the lunar surface is revisited in Robert Stone's three-part documentary, Chasing the Moon.
If the ascent engine on the moon didn't light up, they were marooned. So that was the headline we had, ready to go.
This engine burned 7 minutes and 18 seconds, Frank, to get them into that 9.9-mile orbit, and it has to work.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, stage, engine arm ascent, proceed.
A year before the Apollo 11 mission, popular culture was once again forward-thinking, shooting beyond the moon.
If you think of something like Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, that's in many ways, it comes out in 1968, and it's projecting ahead of the moon landings to an era when regular trips to the moon are going to be a part of everyday life.
And while the space race was in a dead heat between the United States and the Soviet Union, after Soviet cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin became the first man in space in 1961, Gene Roddenberry's series, Star Trek, was already imagining a united federation of planets working together on peaceful space exploration.
And envisioning also a future of what it would look like to have men and women of different races, different nationalities, even an alien, all on board cooperating.
Decades after Apollo 11, technological advances in filmmaking have allowed studios to remaster original NASA and other historic footage into IMAX, HD, and 3D technologies, which have allowed filmmakers such as Robert Stone to offer a visually compelling and historically comprehensive overview of the space race.
We just went through many, many thousands of hours of material in order to arrive at what you see in the final film. But by doing that, we were able to discover things that have been completely forgotten.
The six-minute mark in our countdown for Apollo 11. Now 5 minutes, 52 seconds and counting.
Booster flight.
Working closely with NASA and the National Archives, filmmaker Todd Douglas Miller of the IMAX documentary Apollo 11 offers a time capsule of the week around moon landing from the launch to the astronauts' return. The team processed never-seen-before 70-millimeter historic footage and 11,000 hours of audio recordings on the mission of Apollo 11.
I believe that this nation should commit itself.
Damien Chazelle's feature film on Apollo 11, First Man, is told from the perspective of Neil Armstrong and his family by blending seamlessly the film's cinematography with archival footage. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
This is Science in a Minute.
A group of researchers from the University of South Florida, Florida Atlantic University, and Georgia Institute of Technology say they have discovered the biggest bloom of seaweed in the world during the summer of 2018. The seaweed itself is a form of brown macroalgae called sargassum, and this giant seaweed bloom is called the Great Atlantic Sargassum Belt. It was estimated to weigh about 20 million tons and covered parts of the surface of the Atlantic Ocean from West Africa to the Gulf of Mexico. To make their discovery, the researchers say they analyzed data gathered by NASA's Terra satellite. By studying environmental and field-gathered data, the researchers also determined that the giant seaweed belt forms seasonally and as a response to an input of natural and human-produced nutrients into the ocean. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our programs in all sorts of ways, like on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find us at voanews.com. And we'd like to hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and our email at voaasia@voanews.com. And also on the radio, stations like CCU Radio at National Chung-Cheng University in Taipei, Chiang Mai University, Radio FM 100 in Chiang Mai, Thailand, and Radioactive in Temasek Polytech in Singapore. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Nelson Lopes, our managing editor, Diane Gao. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead.